WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Preparations are underway inside the Sistine Chapel ahead of the conclave of cardinals that will choose the next pope. ABC's James Longman.
The Vatican announcing Wednesday, May 7th, conclave will begin, and the most powerful men of the Catholic Church will gather in the painted magnificence of the Sistine Chapel. Conclave, literally with key, means the cardinals will be shut off from the outside world. No communication, no news, no distractions from their sacred work.
The suspect in Saturday night's deadly car attack on a cultural festival in the Canadian city of Vancouver has been identified.
A lively street festival suddenly filled with the screams of the wounded. At least 11 dead between the ages of 5 and 65, and more than two dozen injured. Authorities identifying the suspect as 30-year-old Kai G. Adam Lowe of Vancouver, charging him with 8 counts of second-degree murder, and they say more charges are coming.
That is ABC's Matt Gutman. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Bad news for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks' Damian Lillard has suffered a torn Achilles tendon in his left leg. An MRI today confirmed the injury. It happened in the first quarter of the Bucks' 129-103 loss to the Pacers in their playoff game last night in Milwaukee. Lillard, who turns 35 this summer, could be out for the next year. Head coach Doc Rivers.
That's why you have teammates and family, you know, around them. It's just such a great freaking dude, like, on the basketball level, but more important, like, as a teammate and a father and all that stuff. And, you know, no one deserves it, but golly, you just look at him. And so that's why I feel bad.
The Bucks play the Pacers in Indiana tomorrow night at 5. Milwaukee down 3-1 in that best-of-7 series. Baseball, the Brewers beat the Cardinals 7-1 to snap a 4-game losing streak. They head to Chicago next to play the White Sox tomorrow night. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversation in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WGBW.fm today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversation. Sign up today at WGBW.fm/newsletter.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Workers' Memorial Day, the day where we ask the question, why is the right to die on the job the only right freely granted to workers? The day where we remember those who have died on the job, our friends, our co-workers, people who have left us way too soon. But before we get into all that, I want to reach out to our newest audiences, our newest affiliates. Randy Rhodes, a true champion for working people, has finally found retirement. And I wish her nothing but the best in these new years and the endeavors that she's going to pick up. Randy, in my view, has always been a true working class hero. So wish her the best. From here, we will pick up the mantle, we will move forward, and we will fight. Well, as Mother Jones said, we'll mourn the dead and we'll fight like hell for the living, and that's where we're going to start today. Because the AFL-CIO came out with their death on the job report, the high toll of injuries. They found out that in 2023, 385 people woke up in the morning, brushed their teeth, had their breakfast, drove to work, and didn't come home. 385 people each and every day. 385 people who were somebody's mother, father, brother, sister, son, daughter. 385 people whose lives ended tragically too soon. For why? Because they went to work. That's not the more than 140,000 people a year who die from occupational illnesses, who they went to work, they came home, and they brought something home with them. And the reason I think today is so important, and why asking that question, why is the right to die on the job the only right freely granted to workers, is because we're right now looking at a Trump administration that's doing everything that they can possibly do to weaken protections for workers. We hear it all the time. Job killing regulations, don't we? But you never really hear about the people killing lack of regulation, the people killing lack of oversight. And right now, as the Trump administration is running around saying, we're going to make coal great again, they're literally closing the Mine Safety and Health Administration offices that would keep workers in those mines safe. So what you could really say is, while they're making coal great again, they're also making black lung great again. They're also harming families. The pendulum is swinging away from protecting workers to, well, taking us back to the good old days where, well, if you died on the job, they threw your bones against the door and that was the wake-up call for the family to head for the exits. Because our history, the history in this country of protecting workers, is not great. The history of children going into mines, of fathers and mothers having to do, well, very difficult, dangerous jobs without the protections that we take for granted today, that history's long. The trail of blood, the trail of lost lives is long. And we're fortunate to be in this moment. Many of us are fortunate enough to not have friends or coworkers who have died on the job. But today is the day we remember those people. And look, I've lost friends and coworkers over the years. I've known countless numbers of people who have told stories of people that have died right in front of them at work. And it's my view that the majority of these deaths were preventable. I've said for years, if I ever wanted to kill somebody, I would just give them a job. Because there has, at least that I know of in my lifetime, there hasn't been a CEO who's gone to jail because a worker died on the job because of their negligence, because of their unsafe conditions. The conditions that they not only allow, but because we're cutting corners, actually encourage. So on this day, Workers' Memorial Day, is when we, as Mother Jones said, we mourn the dead. We mourn our friends. We mourn our coworkers. But we also commit to fight like hell for the living. Us, you and me. And this administration that's doing everything they can do to roll back anything Joe Biden did to help protect workers, anything that Barack Obama did to help protect workers, everything that Richard Milhouse Nixon did to protect workers. We're in a moment right now where I don't care what color hat you wear, red hat, blue hat, green hat, no hat. This is an issue that should unite the entire working class, because nobody wants to go to work and not come home at the end of the day. So for me, we got a lot of organizing to be done around this very issue. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Randy Rhodes, congratulations on your retirement. Randy fans, I want to hear from you, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Brent Booker, General President of the Laborers International Union of North America, going to be here to share some thoughts on Workers' Memorial Day and, well, another executive order. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as Mother Jones said, mourn the dead and fight like hell for the living. And, you know, as we just talked about, today we mourn the memories of those friends, those co-workers who didn't get to go home at the end of their workday. And also for those who got to go home, but what they took home from work with them killed them anyway. And here to share some thoughts on this day, I've asked Brent Booker to come share some thoughts with us. Brent is the general president of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. Brent, thanks for taking time for us.
It's always good to be back on your show. Thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
So, you know, on this day, we always, at least I do, I think of, you know, friends that, as I talked about a moment ago, friends I've known who have died on the job, people who have taken injuries home with them that have ultimately killed them. This is kind of that Memorial Day for working people, to remember those folks that we've lost along the way in the name of, well, profits and capitalism and, well, just bad luck.
Yeah, and look, today's a special day for us to reflect on the fights we've had to get the health and safety standards that currently exist in our collective bargaining agreements. But like you said, to also mourn the unfortunate ones that literally gave their life they didn't come home, or they came home in a different manner in which they went to work. And, you know, the line of defense for that is unions and collective bargaining. And we've been around, we just celebrated our 122nd birthday, and we've been fighting for our members and our workers and workers across the country for 122 years to make sure that they have those health and safety standards that is needed. But today we do get to reflect, and we do mourn those who gave literally their life for their job and for their community.
It all comes down to wages, hours, and conditions, working conditions being at the top of that list also. But, you know, here's the thing. The AFL-CIO just came out with their death on the job report. 385 people every day in 2023 didn't get to go home. So today we remember them, but tomorrow we wake up and we start fighting like hell because this administration doing a lot of things I think that could take us back to the bad old days where a lot more than 385 people were dying every day. Thousands were dying because we're doing away with data collection at NIOSH. They're closing MSHA offices to hurt mine health and safety. OSHA's under attack. It seems like this administration is trying to roll us back to the days where 385 would be a dream number as opposed to what it is now.
A lot of people voted for change in this last election. Some of our members voted for Donald Trump. They wanted to see change. They wanted to see something different. None of our members voted to have a less safe workplace. None of our members voted to get rid of NIOSH. None of our members voted to have less OSHA field offices to do the investigations when, God forbid, something does happen. A lot of times these are accidents. Give them the benefit of the doubt. But in some cases, it is malicious intent from an employer or just gross negligence that there are employers out there that don't care for human life. And we do have governmental regulations and protections built in the system, like NIOSH, to make sure that when our members have a respirator, because they're going into a asbestos-filled building and they're doing that abatement, or they're going to a DOE facility and they're removing and doing demolition of a hazardous material inside of a building. Those respirators have NIOSH stamped on the bottom of them. And our members want to make sure that the respirators that they're using are regulated and are safe, and they do want to go home in the same condition they got there. And having these things taken away in these first 100 days or the threat of having these taken away, that's alarming. And although some people voted for change, nobody voted to have a less safe work environment. And to your point, if we're losing 380 people a day, you get rid of more OSHA offices, you get rid of NIOSH, you get rid of mine safety, it's going to be a whole lot more than 380 people that potentially could be, you know, harmed in harm's way. And on a day like today, we need to stand up and fight like hell for it.
Yeah, I mean, 385 people got up and went to work and didn't come home. That's not the more than 135,000 workers who what they took home with them eventually killed them. And I think a lot of the miners, you're closing MSHA offices, you're closing the cop on the beat. I don't know. I look at the people who have run our mine industries over the years. They're not Boy Scouts. They don't seem to care much about those folks. And I've seen these miners suffering, people younger than me, with black lung and carrying oxygen tanks, people who just wanted to support their families. We can do better, and we should do better.
We absolutely can and should do better. And it's going to take the labor movement. It's going to take LIUNA. It's going to take, you know, our brothers and sisters in the labor movement to stand up and say enough is enough.
Yeah, a moment ago, I talked about friends that I've lost on the job over the years, and we've all... if you work for a living, if you do manual labor, you work with your hands, everybody knows somebody. You got a story?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got a story, right? There's people that, there's personal people who I know that their dad, their uncle didn't come home. In this position, I'm the chairman of our charitable foundation. And every laborer that loses their life on the job site, their family gets a donation from us. I literally just signed a check. We had a member in Northern Virginia who was in a collapse last week. A trench collapsed, and unfortunately, he passed away. So once a week, once a month, I'm signing a check. I'm reading that story. I'm writing a letter to those families. You can't. There's not an amount of money in the world that's going to replace your family member. But you read these stories, and you see that, and you realize that even in today's highly regulated, safe work environments, union collective bargaining agreements, this is a dangerous business. And if you make a mistake, it literally can cost your life. And I'm reminded of that almost on a weekly basis of members that we have that have passed away on the job site. So it's a reminder a lot. We still have a lot of work to do in health and safety.
And I'll throw the point out, if that's happening to your members, imagine what's happening to non-union workers who don't have the same kind of voice, the same kind of protections, and the same kind of bargaining power that you guys have to protect your members. And that's why we need these organizations, why we need OSHA, a strengthened OSHA, NIOSH, MSHA, why we need these organizations. And sadly, I've had too many people going, those are relics of the past. I don't want to learn that they weren't.
Right. Look, we should review government institutions. Nobody's saying that we shouldn't. There's a clear purpose of NIOSH. There's a clear purpose of OSHA. And like you just said, we should be strengthening those. We should make sure that our constituents, our members, our brothers and sisters in the community, our neighbors have, every single type of safety precaution that they possibly can. And doing some really dangerous work, whether it's rebuilding our country's infrastructure, making sure that the lights turn on and power, you name it, where we have members working in it, we need to make sure that those regulations do exist and make sure that they have a collective voice and have a collective bargaining agreement through our union to protect them and raise those concerns without fear of being fired or abused.
Those regulations, you mean those job-killing regulations?
I don't believe in job killing regulations. We can certainly see. I don't want to imagine a world in which a respirator is not regulated and the dangers of those carcinogens or the dangers of those foreign substances of our members, of American workers going through there. So if it takes 15 minutes longer to do that abatement, but everybody goes home safe, that's the best 15 minutes of the day we'll ever spend.
As I said, look, everyone talks about the job killing regulations, but we don't get to talk enough about the people killing lack of regulation. And this is a prime example. Also this week, I got to get your thoughts on this. On Wednesday, the White House came out with another executive order. And on its face, I'm not entirely opposed to it. But I look at this administration with a jaundiced eye. It's an executive order to modernize the American workforce programs for what they're saying for the high paying skilled trades jobs of the future. That's you guys. Any thoughts, gut reactions to this executive order?
I think my gut reaction is similar to yours. On the surface, hey, look, we're going to strengthen, and they use the words registered apprenticeship in the executive order. And that's what our apprenticeship model is based off of. I've written two letters to the President of the United States in his first 100 days. And one was about, you know, protection and preserving of prevailing wages in Davis-Bacon. And the second was about registered apprenticeship, because those are the two things that are most important to our organization, to our members, and going forward. So on the surface, talking about registered apprenticeship and expanding it to the manufacturing world and skilled trades and manufacturing as you know, hopefully we bring more manufacturing back to this country, which I'm all in favor of. On the surface, it looks good. You know, the unfortunate track record, and from 2016 to 2020, when they looked at apprenticeships, they wanted to institute, you know, a new apprenticeship system that wasn't registered, that wasn't jointly managed. Our system, it's not a labor training system. It's not a labor apprenticeship system. It's a labor management. So we have our contractor partners that, you know, we sit down with and have these funds in which we are looking at the, you know, the industry, the future of the industry. How do we train our members? How do we do this safely? This is, and we register with either the state or the federal government saying, here's our curriculum, here's our training techniques, here are the hours it's going to take. It's a very formal process, highly scrutinized, as it should be, because we're sending people out of our apprenticeship school onto construction sites, which some of which can be very dangerous. We want to make sure that we have the best training in the world. And Rick, we've been doing this for decades. And you know, hopefully this administration looks at it and says, you know what, let's use the trades as a model. Let's use their registered apprenticeship system. It's joint labor management. And it works, because we've been doing training for 60, 70 years. And we register with the state, the federal government, and we're good to go. So on the surface, I'm all for it. But there is a track record from the first administration that they didn't buy in totally and completely to registered apprenticeship. And, you know, some of the other things that have happened that we just talked about, whether it's NIOSH or OSHA or worker safety, you know, I'm going to look at this with a skeptical eye until I'm proven right or proven wrong. And in this case, I hope the words on the paper is exactly what they're trying to do. We got 120 days to respond to them, in which we will be responding, talking about how, you know, fortunate we are in the construction industry to have registered apprenticeship to make sure that we have the most productive, highly skilled and best trained workforce in the world to build this nation's infrastructure and continue building, you know, manufacturing in this country.
I mean, the goal that they've set is 1 million new tradespeople. This is what I'm reading. They want to train 1 million new workers in your field and in construction and warehousing and all of that. Which is a laudable goal. I'm all in favor of. My fear, and maybe this is just, again, having read their Project 2025, having seen what the first Trump administration did, my fear is those training programs become, well, privatized scams where someone's lining their pockets and, well, the people who are supposed to be training don't get the kind of quality training that your programs produce, and we, the taxpayers, end up getting shafted both ways. We've got an unskilled workforce, and we paid a premium for not getting it. So that's kind of my concern. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, 6 years ago, they came up with the idea of IRAPs, industry-recognized apprenticeship programs, and asked for comments. And the building trades and LIUNA and the fellow trades submitted hundreds of thousands of letters in support of registered apprenticeship. And because that's a system that works, that's a system that we've done. The IRAPs are going to be employer controlled. There's not going to be a worker voice on there. And that's why we opposed it in the first time. Our system works because it's jointly labor management. We work with our contractor partners. We figure it out. And we're training for the future. So look, if they're going to bring 1 million jobs back to this, I welcome 1 million new manufacturing jobs.
Right there.
Bring it up. I want them to be successful. I want to have things manufactured in this country safely, you know, with a workforce that's properly trained, and our experience and my experience, the best and only way to properly train it is through registered apprenticeship, through joint labor management, where everybody has a voice and a say to make sure that we're using the right curriculum, the right materials, the right training centers. We've got a network of over $1 billion collectively in the building trades of training centers, of curriculum, of equipment, of land, of instructors. Let us show the rest of the country, here's how the right way to train it, instead of trying to water down, if they were to do that, you know, what we currently are doing.
Yeah, see, for me, Brent, if I'm Donald Trump, and I want to court the labor movement, this is the place to do it. Going, look, we're gonna throw tons of money at your joint labor management apprenticeship programs because it's a proven track record. It's the base that they want to grab a hold of. It seems logical that they would reach out to you and try and court you guys to come in. Has that happened?
No, I mean, look, no. Short answer, no, they haven't. We've had conversations with the administration and talked to them about things that are important to us and where we want to go and how we want to how we want to proceed here. But no, we haven't had any direct conversations about, hey, show us your model and show us how to do it. And look, you just mentioned that to throw money at our system. That's the best thing about our system is that we pay for it. It's through our collective bargaining agreements. So this isn't government money that does registered apprenticeship for us. Our members vote when they negotiate their agreement to say, instead of $23 on the check, I want $22.75 on my check because I want 25 cents an hour going to training. Right. Because they understand that they need to have this continuing training and to train the next generation of workforce. So we're not asking for any money from the government. We, look, hey, come take a look at us. Let us show you how we have funded our own training, how we built this network, how we have a $1 billion network of registered apprenticeship training that is producing high quality, safe, productive workers to make sure that this country keeps running.
No, but here, the reason I said that is because, look, if you think this, we're in the middle of a national emergency where we don't have enough and we need to ramp up fast, the best way to do that is to invest in it. To help you guys ramp up your ability to do it a little bit better and a little bit more, not better. That's where I was going with this because, it seems to me that a lot of this money is probably going to be, I know there are a lot of ABC contractors out there who are going, hey, maybe this is the way we pad our bottom line. We get to screw over some apprentices, get to line our pockets. It's a win-win for them. Or is that just my biased view?
No, I mean, I think there's certainly places where that's absolutely a factual statement. That's what's happened. And look, let's put our graduation rates up, right? Let's look at the people who enroll in our project and our programs go through, 3, 4, 5 years and what our graduation rate is. Make sure that we're tracking the people so that we're not just using money to train someone for one job and then get rid of them and then go train somebody else. And that seems to be the model in some places of our competition. So, we are focused on training. It is who we are. It is what we do. And I'll put us up against anybody in the world, let alone in the United States, as to the model that works and the way in which we train today's laborers as well as tomorrow's laborers.
Yeah. No, the reality is my generation was sold on the idea that a college education was the gold ticket to the middle class, whereas my kids understand, at least my son, understands that the gold ticket to the middle class is one of these apprenticeship programs and that ability to earn really good wages, excellent health and retirement security, and better conditions. Last question I've got for you, because in the executive order, they talk about the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, something called WIOA, passed during the Obama years, which, as I understood it back then, had we invested money in these programs that they're now trying to diminish, we would have taken your model and moved it across industries. Nurses, hospitals and labor organizations would have combined together to have apprenticeship programs for CNAs and LPNs and all of that. That was the thought at the time. And it's my understanding, as it's been explained to me, that a lot of our Republican budgets, the people who are proposing this, are the ones who basically killed this. So I'm curious, do you see the laws that are currently in place that could be used as helpful, or do you just see them scrapping anything with Obama or Biden's name on it for some new gadget that maybe Project 2025 addressed?
Yeah, look, I mean, a good idea is a good idea no matter who came up with it. And just trying to get rid of things, because the last guy did it, is not good business. I mean, not everybody has good ideas, not everybody has bad ideas. But when you do have something that works, when you do have something that has a proven track record, we should be learning from it. And we should be cheering on and rooting for success, not, trying to tear everything down and rebuild it in a different manner. And look, I would welcome the opportunity to, show, and we do that a lot. We bring members of Congress and lawmakers, rather than show up to their office, we ask them to come to our training center. because we're really proud of the work that we do. And I would welcome the opportunity to show, you know, anyone in the construction industry on the non-union side and certainly other industries as well to say, look, we've got a system that works. We've figured it out. We don't have all the answers, but it's been around for 50, 60, 70 years. And let us, you know, use this. If we built this up on an existing program, if we built this up, you know, through WIOA or other term, you know, other programs, we should be plussing those up, not, you know, creating something to compete with it.
There you go. Final message on this Workers' Memorial Day.
Solidarity. Stand up and rise. Let's, you know, the way we mourn the people who we've lost is we remember their legacy. We honor their legacy by bringing more people into our union. And we can only do that by organizing. And we do that. We build more power. We create solidarity. And we grow this labor movement, which is desperately needed.
There you go. Brent, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Brent Booker, General President of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. You can check out their website, liuna.org. Want to hear your thoughts. Do you have stories on this Workers' Memorial Day? You can share them with me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
From Ashwaubenon to Alloway, this is 97.9 WGBW. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Some storms could be severe tonight with hail, gusty winds, and a slim tornado chance. Temps fall out of the 60s tonight into the 50s tomorrow as rain wraps early but breezy with clearing. It's 71 right now.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
David Hogg, Democratic National Committee Vice Chair, says, no, we're going to spend $20 million to take out fellow Democrats who are either too old or not voting progressive enough. And Republicans are doing this as well. They don't want any compromise, zero-sum game. I spent 30 years in politics. The best politics are pragmatic. You get 75% of the loaf and you move on.
Catch the Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I go back to something Brent Booker said a moment ago. A lot of his members voted for change. I got to wonder if, you know, going after the organizations, the regulations that keep his members safe. I wonder if that was the change that they were voting for. And look, we're coming up on the first 100 days of the Trump administration. The FL-CIO has come out with their death on the job report. I got to wonder how the two of those are going to mesh. That's why I've asked Jordan Barab to come share some thoughts with us, former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA during the Obama years. Also runs one of the best sites for workers' safety rights in this country, jordanbarab.com/confined space. Make sure you check that out. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to be here, Rick.
So, you know, this new report out by the FL-CIO points out the fact that we had an excess of 5,000 people who died on the job in 2023, 385 people each and every day, some 140,000 people dying of occupational illnesses. Thoughts on where this puts us over the last several years, and do you see this getting better or worse going forward?
Well, I think the way we've seen this administration go and the attacks they've made on workers, on labor unions, and specifically on the health and safety of workers, things can go nowhere but down at this point. The worker safety agencies in this country have been severely understaffed, under-resourced. OSHA, basically, if OSHA were to investigate every workplace in the country just once, it would take them 185 years, and things have just gotten worse and worse. And this administration just got rid of the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, which does, the research around health and safety issues, cares for mine workers with black lung, certifies respirators. So basically every direction in terms of workplace safety and health is on a downward trend right now. And it's pretty scary.
185 years?
Yeah. I'm serious. Yeah. Almost 2 centuries it would take, in other words.
You know, I was explaining this to my son yesterday, and I said, you know, I had done a mine tour a couple of years ago up in Lackawanna County here in Pennsylvania. They'll take you down, you know, a couple hundred feet down into a mine, and there's a tour and have some history. And the mine guide was explaining the working conditions at the time. And he was saying, you know, imagine the lights being off, and he turned the lights down. He said, now imagine being waist deep in a, you know, a stew of slurry, of animal feces, of human waste, of just the worst things you can imagine. And he was walking through what, you know, the working conditions would be. And a woman behind me goes, well, where was OSHA? And, you know, the guys, everyone kind of just stopped and looked at her. You know, this was, you know, obviously more than 100 years ago. I think we've taken for granted that OSHA has always been and will always be. But when I see numbers like this, to inspect every workplace, 185 years, I don't know that it's I don't know. I keep coming back to I don't know how bad it has to get before we wake up and demand better.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's kind of far away from Americans normally. I mean, obviously, you know, people who live in West Virginia and Kentucky are somewhat close to mine workers. But, you know, these days, you know, normally no one knows anyone personally, you know, who got killed in the workplace. Unfortunately, there's so little publicity about people getting killed in the workplace that only their, you know, that maybe there's a small article in a newspaper, but basically only their friends and coworkers. No. And that's why I published on the confined space. I published something called The Weekly Toll, which is every workplace death I can find. But that doesn't include, you know, people dying of workplace illness, workplace disease. And it's just too far away from people. People don't realize the kind of, you know, havoc, the kind of chaos, the kind of hazards that workers face every day on the job in this country. You know, the Occupational Safety and Health Act was just passed, you know, just over 50 years ago. The agency's always been seriously understaffed. It's gotten worse and worse. But the, you know, these are things, you're right, people are starting to take for granted now. I mean, most people in this country weren't even born before OSHA was created. They don't realize how bad things were and how much OSHA has helped. And unfortunately, we seem to be going back into those conditions again.
Yeah, but where my mind goes is, you know, as we watch the destruction of this agency, as we watch them defund and destroy, you know, I think about where we came from. If we're going to seriously talk about reshoring manufacturing and becoming an industrialized nation again, my concern is that with that come the same working conditions that we had, you know, back when that woman said, well, where was OSHA? Because, again, we've taken so much for granted, I think, over the last 40, 50 years, that we don't think we can go backwards. But I fear as we do these things, we will.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, OSHA's already seen at least a 10% cut in its staffing, and that's just from people taking early outs. We haven't seen yet the rifts that they're planning for OSHA. I mean, again, we've seen the destruction of the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, which is tragic. And we're going back in other areas, too. I mean, you know, states are passing laws to make it easier for child labor, for kids to go to work, you know, for small, you know, 14-year-olds to be working all night in dangerous occupations. I mean, all these things are kind of coming back. These hazards, tragedies, and that we thought were in our, you know, dark, deep, long ago past are all coming back now.
I got to tell you, as a parent, look, I got 3 kids. I can't imagine my kids when they were 14. I can't imagine one, the desperation, but two, just the mindset that I'm going to send my 14-year-old child off to work an overnight shift somewhere before maybe they go to school or maybe they don't. I can't imagine. I guess I'm struggling with what kind of a nation does that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody has anything against, you know, kids work. I mean, summer jobs and, you know, maybe a little after school work. But I mean, you know, we're talking about basically full-time jobs in addition to school. And sometimes full-time jobs at night or overnight in addition to school. So obviously, you know, something's got to give there. And unfortunately, in these cases, it's school and it's education that gives. And in many cases, you know, these kids are getting hurt because they don't know to call OSHA. They don't know what unsafe conditions are. You know, you don't go to teenage boys, you know, they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff all the time. And, you know, they don't understand, you know, how dangerous, you know, certain jobs can be. They don't know what they can do about those certain jobs. And they're too, they don't have enough, you know, power or knowledge to really challenge their employer about unsafe conditions. So it's just...
That's the perfect employee for some low road employers. Exactly. Exploitable, uneducated, and desperate. And sadly, we've allowed that to come up. But here's where my other fear is: the more we don't follow this stuff, like you said, you try and find the people who have been killed on the job because of the scant reporting that goes on. I'm watching this administration destroy every institute, every organization, everything that the government does to track that data. And you brought up NIOSH a moment ago. That to me is one of those things. You know, bad things are coming in the future if your goal is to destroy that, because then you know bad things are going to happen and nobody's going to know about it. Or am I missing something?
No, I mean, you know, and unfortunately, you know, people don't even know the NIOSH existed. You know, people in West Virginia with black lung. I mean, NIOSH, you know, people don't know this, but one of the things that NIOSH did was provide health care to minors who are exposed to coal dust and silica, and protect them and, you know, monitor them, treat them for free for black lung. That is all gone now. MSHA finally, during the Biden administration, passed a silica standard because silica dust, which causes cancer and terrible lung damage, you know, when mixed with coal dust, can cause black lung disease, a very severe form of black lung disease, very quickly, can require, you know, relatively young minors with relatively little experience to need lung transplants. And that whole thing now has been wiped out. And to, you know, again, to add insult to injury, you know, again, Biden passed issued a standard on silica, which the Trump administration just announced last week. They're going to suspend enforcement of that. So not only are they getting rid of any monitoring and healthcare regarding black lung and coal miners, but they're even refusing to enforce the standard that would protect future miners from getting this disease. And it's just, you know, this is, you know, they say they're getting rid of the war on coal, right? But they're actually declaring war on coal miners.
No, and you know, the closing of the MSHA offices are a perfect example of that. And this is where, you know, as working people, and again, I think you said it a moment ago, most workers don't know somebody who's been killed on the job. But people who go to work and shower at the end of the day, people who work with their hands, a lot of us do. And this is something that, you know, unfortunately hasn't gotten enough attention in my view. You know, I've often said that if I wanted to kill somebody, I would just hire them and create make sure I didn't have to worry about safe working conditions, because it's my understanding, and maybe you know this better than I do, but because the penalties are pathetically low, and I don't know the last time an employer went to jail when a worker died. Even if their negligence was so severe, I don't know of a case where that's happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when you talk to people who don't know the law, and you say, well, these terrible working conditions, the workers have no control, they're getting hurt, they're getting killed. People will say, well, hey, you just sue the company. Well, you can't sue a company because of workers' comp, which is inadequate, because of workers' comp laws. You can't sue your employer, no matter how badly you're hurt, if you're killed. You know, unsafe conditions, you cannot sue your employer except in very rare situations. You know, there are a few employers, and I write about these, I mean, I get to write about pretty much all of them because it happens so rarely, who do go to jail for a very short amount of time for extremely negligent behavior that kills workers. But those are very few, and they're usually not even done under the Occupational Safety and Health Act because that law is so weak. They're usually because of very, you know, progressive and aggressive and pro-worker local prosecutors who will charge employers in some cases with homicide. But again, those cases are very rare, very few and far between, you know, in contrast with the, you know, the thousands of workers who are killed on the job every year and the many tens of thousands who die from occupational disease. It really is. I mean, that's one of the changes we're trying to make in the Occupational Safety and Health Act, to make it easier for criminal prosecutions, because I've always said that nothing sharpens the mind of an employer more than the prospect of spending time in jail.
No, and I say that across the spectrum, wage theft, working mm-hmm. conditions, you know, all of those things that seem to, well, you know, it was an accident. Sorry, we'll try better next time, Jordan.
Yeah. And it's you know, and again, every you know, nothing is getting better now. Everything is bad. We've got not only the attacks that Trump has made directly on the workplace safety and health agencies, but we're coming up on budget season again as well. I mean, there has to be a, you know, the FY 2026 budget is supposed to be finished by the end of September. And we'll see what kind of, we haven't seen the president's proposal yet. We're supposed to get a budget proposal from the president next week. And we'll see what he is proposing for agencies like OSHA, like MSHA, and again, you know, NIOSH, which doesn't exist anymore.
Well, if what we're hearing is accurate, and Doge Boy and his ferrets get their way, it's going to be a substantial cut. Because again, if you're going to try and cut $2 trillion, or what is it, $1 trillion, or wait a minute, is it $150 billion? Is it? I don't know. I don't know what Doge Boy and his ferrets are doing. But I know it's going to harm working people and people like you and me.
And you know, it's not even, I mean, even his cuts, you know, that are supposedly saving all this money aren't really saving all this money, because, you know, you cut the IRS, you know, that just means they're collecting less money, less tax revenue. You know, if workers get injured or killed in the workplace, you know, who pays for those injuries? Who pays for those illnesses to be treated in the hospitals? You know, the loss from workplace injury, illness, and death every year is in the many billions of dollars compared to, a relatively, I mean, the entire budget of OSHA, the entire annual budget of OSHA is only about $630 million.
Wow.
Tiny agency.
Because according to the AFL-CIO's report, they've got workplace injuries and illnesses estimated between $174 billion and $348 billion a year.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even count, you know, the loss for families, the ripple effect throughout families, the societal and community effects, none of that. This is just dollars and cents. So you would think employers would be a little more, I don't know, willing to have a cop on the beat so that you weed out low road employers.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, having those laws is better for the high road employers, because they don't have to compete with the employers who choose to cut, save money by cutting corners on safety and health. It should be a win-win situation.
Yeah.
And also for Elon and his Doge boys, if they really want to make government more efficient, if they want to save money, you know, then they should be investing more money in agencies like OSHA and like MSHA and like NIOSH.
Yeah, and look, I look at Amazon. You know, they in the warehouse industry, they have one of the worst records. And if once every 185 years, I guess I'm stuck with that 185 year number.
Yeah.
I guess I'm stuck with that because, you know, again, I go back to, you know, the woman that I met in the coal mine who believed that OSHA was, you know, a powerful thing that made lives better. So do you mm-hmm. see this as an opportunity, especially on this Workers' Memorial Day, of people, you know, you go back to what Mother Jones said, you know, mourn the dead, fight like hell for the living. Is this one of those things we fight like hell for?
Absolutely. I mean, and we literally are fighting for workers' lives. I mean, this really is really literally is a matter of life and death. Workers' Memorial Day is Monday. That's the official day, although there have been events going on all week. But that is the day really to redouble our efforts. And you know, the problem is going to be, you know, when this budget season comes up, there are so many, you know, different agencies and different issues that are being shortchanged here. You know, it's going to be very easy for workplace safety and health issues to kind of get lost in the shuffle. So it's doubly important now for workers to really make their voices heard and to fight for not just to keep the protections we have, but for better protections, for more money for workplace safety and health protections.
Last question I've got for you, on this Workers' Memorial Day, you know, as I asked Brent Booker a moment ago, any personal story, you know, I shared, you know, I'm going to share some of my thoughts, but any personal stories on this day?
Well, I spent the other day with a woman from Wisconsin, whose son, I think 17, 18 year old son, was killed on a farm a few years ago. And this was an incident that didn't need to happen. It was in strict violation of OSHA standards. But you might not know that, because this was on a small farm, and OSHA, because of a congressional rider on OSHA's budget ever since the 1970s, OSHA is not even allowed to step foot in farms with 10 or fewer employees. So OSHA didn't even investigate her son's death. So not only do we have a very preventable death, but we have a situation where, you know, Congress has you know, exempted farm employers from any kind of OSHA inspections, any kind of oversight, any kind of, you know, even an investigation, much less a citation and penalty. So that you know, that's just one of many, many stories that you hear every day of you know, people losing their husbands, their wives, their sons and daughters in situations that are totally preventable, shouldn't have happened in the first place. And yet we see this administration totally disrespecting them by actually, you know, lowering the protect the, you know, the meager protections that they had.
Yeah, and also, you know, to put in that as well, a lot of public sector workers in states that don't have oversight. You know, I think of the Jake Schwab bill here in Pennsylvania that can't seem to get passed. He worked for a bus company, a public sector employee, was killed on the job. And as just like you said with your story, not investigated, nothing.
Yeah.
Because there's no cop on that beat.
Yep. There's 8 million public employees in this country that don't have OSHA coverage, do not have the right to a safe workplace, do not have the right to come home alive and healthy at the end of their workday. 8 million public employees, and they do work just as dangerous as private sector employees.
Look, in the wealthiest country in the history of humanity, at its wealthiest moment, this should be the barest of bare minimums, safe working conditions. But Jordan, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing some thoughts. Thanks so much.
All right. You're welcome, Rick. Thanks for inviting me.
Jordan Barab, former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor there at OSHA. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got any stories you want to share? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1965. That was the day the American Federation of Hosiery Workers merged with the Textile Workers Union of America. Hosiery workers had begun organizing as early as 1909. By 1923, the American Federation of Full Fashion Hosiery Workers, as the union was originally called, had affiliated with the American Federation of Labor. Women made up the majority of those employed in the industry. Competition within the industry was fierce and a major focus for the early union. From its founding, the union was known for its progressive stances. It focused not only on contracts, but also on social welfare programs such as pensions and health insurance. During the Great Depression in 1933, the union pushed for the founding of a low-rent housing project in Philadelphia. The result was the Carl Mackley Houses, a subsidized governmental housing project. The union operated a nursery school for residents of Carl Mackley and the surrounding community. When the Congress of Industrial Organizations broke off from the AFL, the Hosiery Union left with them as part of the Textile Workers Organizing Committee. In the spring of 1937, Pennsylvania hosiery workers held a sit-down strike. The strike was led by Emil Raiev, a Polish-American worker who had joined the union when he was only 15 years old. The strike grew to include 50,000 workers and shut down the Pennsylvania hosiery industry. The workers won raises between 8 and 10%. In 1947, the hosiery workers decided that they did not want to pay the dues increase required by the CIO. They left the organization and reaffiliated with the AFL. Finally, in 1965, changes in the industry led the union to merge with the Textile Workers Union. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, this Workers' Memorial Day, for me, it's about remembering those friends, coworkers, those people who got up every day and punched the clock to support their families, to make a better lives for their family, their friends, those folks who, well, they didn't come home, or what they brought home with them killed them anyway. This is the day where we remember that, and we then commit to making things better. That's the point. Make sure it doesn't happen again. We are the wealthiest country in the history of humanity right now. This is it. And still, we tolerate, they're just accidents. when you allow low road employers to push unsafe working conditions and workers are powerless to defend themselves, what does that say about you as a society? What's it say about us? And look, as I've said, you know, I've known several people who've died on the job, but I've known a lot more who have been injured. I know a lot more who have gone home and for whatever reason, their lives changed. A friend right now was crushed by a bunch of steel pipe that was strapped to the wall of a trailer, and he got pinned between the pipes that were falling and the wall. His life's never going to be the same. I remember a guy who there wasn't a catwalk on the back of the tractor, so he stepped on the gas tank, trying to hook a line in the middle of a trailer and slipped, got his foot caught under one of the tank straps and fell backwards and just shattered his ankle, tore his Achilles, broke part bones in his neck. Life never going to be the same. These are people who they got up to do a job, to earn a wage, to support their families, and their life is never going to be the same. And it's days like today that I remember all of that stuff, because it could have been me. Could have been any one of us. So when I see the kind of attacks that are happening on OSHA, when I see the kind of attacks that are happening on the data collection that lets us know that this stuff is out there, that it isn't just a one-off if someone gets hurt, that it's happening across the country to thousands and thousands of workers. And there's no one overseeing it. And this is my problem with the Trump administration. It was my problem during the campaign. I said repeatedly, look at Project 2025. It's about shifting oversight back to employers, because employers are going to do the right thing for themselves, not for you, not for your family, not for your coworkers, for themselves. And if you getting hurt and them having to replace you costs them, a couple of bucks, especially a couple of bucks less than it would be to provide a safe workplace, it's what they're going to do. Unless someone is there keeping track, unless someone is there to hold them accountable. And as Jordan said, unless someone there is, you get a lot more interested when the prospect of finding your way behind bars because of something you did, you get a little more interested. So in this moment, on this day, the hope is that this becomes an issue that Democrats, hey, get on board. Republicans, we'd love to have you back. Working people, red hat, blue hat, green hat, no hat, don't care. This is an issue that should unite us. Nobody I've ever met doesn't want to go home at the end of the day. I've never met anyone who said, boy, I sure hope I get sick. Sure hope I get hurt today. So for me, the idea of providing safer workplaces, giving workers more of a voice, having a cop on the beat, all very positive things and things we should be committing toward. And that's why politics matters. I have a lot of listeners go, well, why do unions care? Why? It was unions who helped fight for the 8-hour day. It was unions who fought for getting children out of mines. It was unions who fought for OSHA. It was working people who fought for the EPA so we could breathe clean water and clean air. It was people coming together. It wasn't politicians who were saviors. It was working people not allowing themselves to be divided, not allowed to be sliced and diced and pitted against each other as we are in this moment. The fact that Elon Musk is someone working people are looking to help solve problems is a problem in and of itself. The problem that we're not making Jeff Bezos a poster child for unsafe working conditions is a problem of itself. These are not heroes. These are not our role models. These are people who have made wealth off the back of people's struggles, off of your sweat, your tears, and unfortunately, sometimes lives. So again, today, this is the day that we remember those who have lost their lives, and we commit to move forward to make sure no one else does. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If I've said something that gets under your skin, on your mind, I want to hear about it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. For our Randy Rhodes listeners, welcome. I look forward to hearing from you. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We will see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Senator Ted Cruz wants President Trump to make a move on his tariff plan. The Texas Republican telling ABC News he supports the president's plan to bring more manufacturing jobs back to the states, but Cruz warns waiting to negotiate could backfire.
I think President Trump today has enormous, unprecedented leverage to negotiate with our trading partners and to get much, much lower tariffs for U.S. goods and services at trading countries all around the world.
Tornado watch is running from the southwest to the midwest as some unstable systems move in.
For the next couple of hours, really till 11 p.m. tonight, Oklahoma City down to San Angelo. Also, this is a really wide-ranging system, so I wanted to time it out for you. The next few hours are the worst of it, in southeastern Minnesota at least, and then it moves into western Wisconsin. But not until 1 a.m. does Green Bay, Wisconsin start to see these damaging winds come through, and you could have embedded tornadoes throughout the night, so well after the sun goes down.
ABC's Ginger Z, this is ABC News. It's been